I'm here to talk about my work on a two-level throughput and latency I/O control for parallel storage systems. Let's first give you a brief background on parallel storages. As we all know that the high-performance computing systems are composed of multiple compute nodes to aggregate computing resources. And to match those substantial computing resources, on the back end, the storage system also needs to be scaled up. So we use parallel storage nodes to match performance for the compute nodes. And those distributed parallel storage nodes are managed by parallel file systems such as PVFS, GPFS, or Lustre, etc. Those parallel file systems consist of data nodes which manage distributed data and metadata nodes which can also distribute metadata if necessary. And on the client side, the compute nodes run application processes issuing I/O requests through NPR library, and which is followed by the translation on the client daemon from parallel I/Os to generic I/Os over the network. And on the server side, those daemons manage data individually. This is the first piece of our motivation for this work, which is represented by multiple applications running on the HPC system but sharing the same set of storage nodes, represented by the parallel storage system on the right side of this graph. However, those applications, they might have very different workloads or access patterns. For example, the WRF, which is a weather forecast application, needs frequent update of the output file on the magnitude of gigabytes per period. And for S3D, which is a computation intensive application, it also does periodic checkpointing of gigabytes of data to fend against application failure. And for MPI Blast, which is a parallel database, before it's running, it will load gigabytes of data before execution. Those applications, apart from their own I/O demands, they might also change in their own priority based on user needs. So, for example, the WRF might have to be prioritized when a hurricane is coming. And so, although there are a couple of applications sharing the storage and competing for the limited storage resources, those applications cannot be recognized or differentiated by the current storage systems, and their I/Os interfere with each other. As a result, their quality of service cannot be guaranteed, and their application performance is degraded in unpredictable ways. This is our previous work to address part of the problem through a system named VPFS, Virtualized Parallel File System. The Virtualized Parallel File System interposes the application I/Os and creates a virtual parallel file system for each application through a proxy. And the queue represents the virtual PFS on each data node for each application. And these virtual parallel file systems are spawned upon the application arrival on each data node so that they can be managed through the proxy to enforce quality of service for each application. And the novelty of this work is that we manage the global bandwidth proportional sharing instead of the individual local bandwidth proportional sharing, because the applications might access data nodes in very different ways using different layouts. And we recognize the difference between applications, which might have different sets of data nodes, and we achieve global proportional sharing on the whole level of the parallel file system instead of on each individual data node. And in this work, there's a fixed queue depth, which we will address later, because this parameter is fixed in current conventional SFQ-based algorithms, so we wish to improve that to address further problems we see. So this is a further problem. In this experiment, in this motivation experiment, we run two types of scientific benchmarks. We measure the performance we obtained from BTIO, which is a NASA scientific parallel application benchmark. And we use two sets of data for this benchmark. The first one is large BTIO, which is represented by several gigabytes of data with IOs of 1 megabytes per IO. And another set of data is small BTIO, represented by a few hundred megabytes. And also, each IO has only like 320 bytes long. And the white bar on these two sets of on these two groups of bars is the original performance achieved without any interference from IOR. And the gray bar is that when the application is running in a shared mode with together with IOR, they don't share the compute nodes, but they do share the underlying storage nodes, so that the application performance is degraded with the under the contention from IOR's intensive IO pattern. And the percentage compared to the original performance is 31% and 3.1% of the original performance, respectively. And what we observed is that from the stripe bars, we try to restore the performance of BTIO with our current work from VPFS, which uses the throughput control algorithm named DSFQ to restore its performance. And for the large BTIO case, it is restored to less than 60% of the original performance, while for a small BTIO, it is restored to only a little more than 10% of the original performance. And it is observed that the 11% of small BTIO percent is much less than the 58% for large BTIO, mainly because small BTIO issues a lot of synchronous small IOs, which is latency sensitive because the turnaround time spent in IO subsystem is relatively large between two consecutive computations. So this is a problem we are going to address in our work. So we observed that HPC applications require throughput or latency guarantees, or both guarantees, interfere with each other on the parallel storage systems so that their performance becomes low. And VPFS enforcement on bandwidth-only sharing is not enough to satisfy those different applications' needs. And the solution we propose is to use existing VPFS solution to create a new scheduler upon it to recognize and regulate IOs with the awareness of both throughput and latency needs. So we have just covered background, motivation, and overview. In the next few minutes, we'll introduce the architecture of the two-level parallel IO scheduler for both throughput and latency, and followed by the details of the algorithm which controls the queue depths. And then we'll introduce the experimental evaluation and draw our conclusions and future work. First of all, before I introduce the work, there is a change in the definition of quality of service for both latency and throughput. If we define them separately, they are just in terms of megabytes per second or milliseconds. But if we combine them together to achieve both throughput and latency guarantee for each application, we need to define a tuple named TD, which represents throughput or and latency, or throughput and deadline. So T is the agreed throughput upper bound limit for the application, and D is the guaranteed latency with the agreed throughput for the application. That means if the application issues IO requests lower than T, then D is guaranteed. Otherwise, if T is violated, then D is not guaranteed anymore. So this is like both an agreement from the application side and the promise from the storage side. Now let's take a detailed look at our system design. So the boxes represent the distributed parallel storage nodes. in which there is a two-level scheduler inside it. On the lowest level, we see a storage device with its own queue, and we want to control the depth of the storage device. And on the upper level, we have a VPFS implemented with DSF queue to control the throughput. And the boxes within, the four boxes with thick lines represents four different classes of applications named C1, C2, C3, up to 3CM. So there could be multiple classes of applications. And on the lower level, we used a feedback control loop to control, sense both the EDF queue statistics and also from the device, and the loop controls the depth of the storage device. And the monitor will also report statistics up to the upper level and cooperate with the upper level for best utilization of the whole system. And monitor will also transfer data to the controller, which in turn tells the dispatcher how to dispatch requests from the EDF queue down to the device. And the red lines between the large box and those smaller boxes on the right represents the communication and synchronization between those parallel storage nodes for parallel file system purpose. For example, they synchronize quality of service to adjust each individual node's needs for their own proportional sharing to achieve the global target. Now let's split them into different levels and see them in more details. On the first higher level, we have an efficient way of doing admission control based on different applications' quality of service, which is a T defined by themselves in the quality of service. So we implemented strict fair sharing using the SFQ-based algorithm for better utilization. So we compare our solution of this fair sharing to the traditional credit-based replenishment scheme. First of all, the credit replenishment scheme will have to replenish the credits to each class of applications from time to time based on a time window scheme. And the problem about the credit-based replenishment is that the credits are distributed before the request arrives, so that we can see on this graph when applications have different priorities or weights, their credits is equal to the number of credits totally replenished times the weight of their own, where the weight is normalized. So whenever there are D credits in each time window, we distribute them immediately whenever the D credits are replenished. However, applications are not work conserving every time, in every time window. So it could be that C1 and CM have used up their credits. However, C2 and C3 still have full credits left for them. In this case, there are small moments of underutilization for C1 and CM when they cannot use any more credits until the next replenished moment. So that D times 1 minus W2 and W3 credits is used. Compared with our solution of using SFQ-based algorithm to control the distribution of credits, the credits are only distributed upon the arrival of actual requests, so that if C2 has a smaller rate than the agreed rate and CM has a larger rate than the agreed rate, we can issue credits to them accordingly, so that the sum of R1 and R4 is equal to D, and no credits are issued to C2 and C3, so which is more utilization than the credit-based scheme. So on the lower level, we will mainly focus on two kind of statistics. The first one draws from EDF queue, which is being EDF wait time, representing the time spent by the requests waiting in the EDF queue. And the other one is the 95th percentile response time, where we get from the actual device for our calculation. So we will control the, we will control the RO on this, which is the depth of each time window on device, so that it actually achieves the target response time agreed by the application, however, making the utilization high. And before we go to the algorithm part, we'll introduce three bounds the algorithm based on, which is first one is for deadline control for each class I, the maximum depth regarding response time on the storage device. And this is the second and third one are regarding throughput control, which is lower bound depths, error lower O to ensure any request whose deadline in the current window is completed, and the upper bound depths, error upper O if the latency need is continuously met and utilization should be raised. And we also introduce three terms, which is X, the number of requests complete in last time window, and RO, the current time window queue depths, and RO max is the maximum number of outstanding requests in the current time window. So we go back to the lower level graph, and we don't see any higher level here. So this is what happens at the end of the current time window in the low level. And the red boxes represent those requests who is still existing in this system but needs to be processed immediately, must be finished in the next time window. So the red box inside the storage layer represents at the end of current time window, it is still not finished. So apparently that slot must be opened in the next time window. And the red box inside EDF queue represents a request whose deadline falls in the next time window. So one slot must be open for that request, apparently in the next time window, to guarantee the deadline for it is not missed. And we will control the current time window's queue depth RO scaled by three coefficients to derive the three threshold bounds described earlier. So first we observe the DI, which is taken from TI DI, the class deadline for I, for class I, which is the sum of the time spent in EDF queue and the device. So we derive EI, which is the first coefficient, to be equal to DI minus mean time mean waiting time in the EDF queue over TIO, where TIO is the 95th percentile response time in the storage, and the DI minus MTI has this straightforward meaning, which is the average time left to complete future requests. So this ratio has the following feature: the more time left to complete a request, the larger EI, and the smaller actual latency, the larger EI. So it is consistent with the definition of the first bound, that we need a response time sensitive queue depth to achieve deadline guarantees without bringing the queue depths too large. And also next, when we look at the next time window's workload, we also predict how many requests will be arriving in the next time window, represented by those in dashed line boxes. And we also have two kinds of requests in those incoming requests: those who will not miss their deadline in the next time window, and those who will. And those who will are marked in red boxes. So we have two more coefficients to derive. The first one is error underline O over X. So X is the current time window's capacity of the storage, which is means the number of requests complete in the current time window. And error underscore O represents 3 in our current example, as you can see clearly why it is 3, because there are 3 red boxes, which means it is the lower bound for the next time window, how many requests have to be completed without making any requests missing their deadlines. And the U is the other coefficient, which means the upper bound. It is derived by error overline O divided by X. So in this example, we have at most 6 requests to complete in the next time window. So that is 6 over X. So error is interpreted by the lower bound future demand over the current capacity of the device. And U is interpreted as the upper bound of future demand over current capacity of the device. So EI can be represented, represents the latency requirement to derive the actual next time window Q depth, and error and U represents the throughput aspect of the Q depth. So we multiply the 3 coefficients by the original current time window Q depth. So we have derived a few rules. If the error response time O is less than the lower bound, then that represents an overloaded case. For the storage, so in the other case, if the response time depth is larger than the upper bound, we will have to use the actual upper bound. So there are a few cases which I will not explain further in much detail. And we have 2 cases depending on whether the current time window is overloaded or underloaded, and we will derive the next time window Q depth accordingly. And over all the classes, a minimum of those values will be collected to be the next time window Q threshold. And also we have designed the cooperation between those 2 levels, from the device level up to the lower level, up to the higher level, to report idleness so that the credits are replenished continuously without underutilizing the storage. And our evaluation results represent a one server, one client setup, where 2 applications are represented by 64 processes on the one client node, and uses PVFS2 as a prototype and IOR as the clients. We will see the adaption of storage queue size and the handling of the queue size in overloaded and underloaded case. We designed the experiment such that 2 kinds of applications run in different patterns, one on off and one continuously increasing its issue rate with different quality of service definition. And we designed this way because we want to show that when 2 applications run together, they exceed the storage capacity, so the storage becomes overloaded. And when only one is running, it is underloaded, and only one is running, it is still overloaded. So the transition between these 3 cases illustrates the capability of the storage system's scheduler. And we observe the adaption of queue length in this way, according to the last graph, which is IO issue rates for 2 applications. We see these things. First of all, when 2 applications run together, it can detect the overloaded case, so the queue length is brought up, so that the storage can quickly pass through the overloaded cases as soon as possible. And only one application is running, it brings down the queue depth, so it actually achieves the latency and throughput requirement without violating them, and at a reasonable cost. And all those 5 on periods are identified, and at the last 2 on periods, the frequency of those high Q depth values appear more, because the only one application can already oversaturate the storage. So you can see a pattern where more red crosses are high above the actual concurrency of the applications. So last of all, we observed the latency differentiation between 2 applications. Remember, application 1 has higher throughput, however lower quality of service definition. In this graph, we can see that application one conforms to 100 milliseconds 10 times more than application two, while application one's performance overall 95th percentile is smaller than application two. So when even when the whole system is tends to be overloaded, the application one's latency is well below application two's latency, because in these cases, application two's latency is off the chart and not shown here. So our conclusion is that two-level schedulers can effectively respect the latency needs of different HPC applications, and latency can be managed using a feedback control loop as a black box storage device. And in the future, we will manage IOs of different sizes and create distributed versions of EDF schedulers. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions in the audience? Yes?
So, if I understand correctly, you're controlling the amount of resource that you're giving to each the different applications of the users, the called in each time cycle. How long did you say the time cycle was?
Oh, I didn't say. It is implicitly set here. In this 600 second run, I have more than 1,000 time windows, so that each time window is like 500 millisecond.
And 500 milliseconds. Find that you can that the computational load to adjust. I mean, this gives you enough sensitivity so that within the next round you will actually be able to manage the. I mean, the thing is that the response time of the underlying storage device can be quite variable depending upon how much of a seek it has to do and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering whether you found any variations, if there, for example, if you look at a very bursty workload, I do notice that you had the stair step thing or the square wave thing, so that's sort of, but I'm just wondering if you have really sharp, hot burst, how well does it handle that kind of situation? Did you do any experiments like that?
Yeah, we are aware of that problem. For example, those I/O requests we used here is more than 1 megabytes per I/O. So their I/O response time is known beforehand. So we kind of define the time window size according to the actual expected latency of I/Os in those experiments. For very spiky and very small I/Os, which tend to expect a very fast turnaround for each time window, we haven't obtained any results or ideas for that. But the time window is configurable.
Well, that becomes another feedback problem.
Another question?
I have one.
Anyone has one?
So if you mention yet another control loop, I would say you have a two-level feedback loop here. And to make a reference to this morning's keynote, I guess that you checked that they interfere well. And if you have two, would there be any interesting problem which would require to have a three-level or more? Would you see this as a dimension of generalization?
We see an interesting scenario, actually, is that in terms of composability, when we run it on more than two nodes and each loop runs individually, and the response time that does not converge anymore.
Okay.
So that is an interesting question. About a third layer, I'm not sure yet.
No, it doesn't need to. It was a structural question. Okay, thank you very much.